the group's challenge Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s impending electoral victory before the Supreme Court. We'll tackle that with election lawyer Emil Marañón III. A political analyst believes a leading vice presidential bet, Sara Duterte Carpio's experience as Davao City Mayor, will help her lead the education department. Later on in the program, we'll speak to Duterte Carpio's spokesperson on her vision for the country's education system. North Korea records 6 more deaths, likely caused by its ongoing COVID-19 outbreak. And Ukraine falls back from the besieged city of Mariupol, ceding control to Russia. Hi, I'm Camino Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with this story. A petition has been filed before the Supreme Court seeking to nullify the looming electoral victory of presidential bet Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Civic groups asked the High Court to cancel Marcos's certificate of candidacy. They also asked the Supreme Court to issue a temporary restraining order to stop the Senate and House from canvassing the votes for Marcos in the May 9 elections. The petitioners say Marcos should not have been allowed by the Commission on Elections to run for president due to his previous conviction for tax evasion. In 1995, Marcos was convicted by the Quezon City Regional Trial Court for failure to file income tax returns and pay income taxes from 1982 to 1985. The son and namesake of the late dictator, Ferdinand Marcos Sr., holds a commanding lead in the recent polls with over 31 million votes. Now, for more on this petition filed against Marcos Jr. before the Supreme Court, we're now joined by election lawyer Emil Marañón III. Attorney Marañón, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Good afternoon sa inyong lahat. Magandang hapon.
All right. So first off, why is it important for this matter to be brought up to the Supreme Court this early?
Well, actually, hindi na to early. In fact, this is already late because alam natin yung takbo ng mga cases in the previous elections. Usually po yung mga ganitong kaso like in due course or disqualification are actually elevated to the Supreme Court as early as around December. So ngayon po, tapos ng election, yung ngayon lang po inakyat ito sa Korte Suprema. So I will not call it by any way na early, but rather this came too late po.
And this was not by design. Because you had to wait, or the petitioners had to wait for the unbanked decision.
Yes, that is correct po. Because under the law, the moment na hindi ka satisfied sa decision ng COMELEC Division, antayin muna yung decision ng COMELEC and bank before you can go up to the Supreme Court. And unfortunately, the COMELEC and bank only decided after the elections. So yung kaya po ngayon lang natin ito nakikita na inaakyat sa Korte Suprema.
So that if people supportive of the administration say that this petition only seeks to sow discord, what do you say to that?
Well, una-una, hindi naman kasalanan ng mga petitioners bakit po na-decide very late in the day na yung COMELEC. In fact, after the elections na, which is actually very unusual or in fact very strange because as we have witnessed, for example, in the Grace Poe petition back in 2016, as early as December po, natapos na yung kaso sa COMELEC at inakyat na sa Korte Suprema, that in fact before the elections, the Supreme Court has already decided with finality on the question of her citizenship. But in this case, natapos na po yung election, wala tayong narinig sa COMELEC. And in fact, it was the decision of the COMELEC and bank only came after the elections.
Talk to us about, you know, previous cases, if you know of any. Talk to us about case studies wherein the Supreme Court actually granted a temporary restraining order on the counting of votes, because that's one other factor that the petitioners are seeking before the High Court.
Well, I haven't heard of any case wherein the Supreme Court has issued a TRO or a temporary restraining order to actually stop the counting of votes. Actually po, in fact, my legal opinion on this is that hindi po pwede mag-issue ng suspension as regards the canvassing of votes because the law governing disqualifications and denied due course, which is RA 6646, specifically in Section 7 thereof, states that the court, in this case, the Supreme Court, because andun ngayon pending ang kaso, may suspend the proclamation but not the canvassing. So we can clearly see that in the provision of the law. So ibig sabihin po niyan, hindi po pwedeng tigilan yung pagbilang or yung pag-canvas ng boto, but the Supreme Court may issue actually a suspension of the proclamation, yung pagproklama po, ibig sabihin noon pagkatapos na po ng canvassing.
Mm. Because you said that, do you think that the Supreme Court will appreciate this petition piecemeal? Or do you think that this seeking of a TRO on the canvassing will actually be detrimental to the questions, the focus of this petition before the court?
Well, for me, the TRO, whether it will be granted or not, is irrelevant because at the end of the day, the Supreme Court has the residual jurisdiction to entertain the petition for certiorari filed by the petitioners even after proclamation. So kahit po maproklama na si Bongbong Marcos as the next president of the Republic, it will not stop the Supreme Court from actually entertaining the petition for certiorari filed by the petitioners.
All right, so let's focus on presidential front runner, former Senator Bongbong Marcos now. With this question before the Supreme Court, what does this mean for his impending administration?
Well, basically, there will be like a hanging sword, di ba? Na parang may threat all the time kung hindi to ito ma-resolve na Supreme Court as soon as possible. So there will always be the threat that he will be replaced if ever the Supreme Court will decide against him. If ever the Supreme Court will actually decide to reverse the COMELEC and say na disqualified na siya. Mm-hmm. And of course, if mangyari po ito, either yung cancellation case or yung disqualification case, so may iba-ibang rules na nag-govern dito. So it's either the Vice President who will actually succeed, or ang isang alternate option ng Supreme Court is to make actually the second placer in the presidential election seat as the next president of this republic. So merong threat na ganoon. And of course, alam naman natin that this legal issue, of course, question ito ng whether may stability ba yung government or wala. Yung considering nga yung top position natin sa gobyerno, may possibility na mapapalitan pa. So alam naman natin na with the change in the presidency, meron din po changes sa policy. So this will be a hanging sword kay Bongbong Marcos if ever he will be proclaimed later on.
We're going to talk more about that in a bit. But first, I have to ask you, what about the 31 million vote mandate? Doesn't that supersede the questions and his certificate of candidacy?
Well, ang paulit-ulit na ruling ng Korte Suprema is that no amount of vote. So kahit sabihin natin na unanimous pa yung boto ng tao, if in case na hindi qualified or disqualified yung isang kandidato, it does not matter. So kahit unanimous pa yan, it will not cure the fact na hindi siya eligible or disqualified siya as a candidate. So paulit-ulit yung ruling ng Supreme Court. In other words, the Supreme Court has been very consistent that it does not matter.
All right, so you kind of touched on this a while ago. I want to go deeper into it now. So, Attorney Marañon, are you saying that until this issue is resolved, do you think that everything that emanates from this impending administration will be put into question? And I mean everything. We're not just talking about the win here, but policies that will be made by this administration, certain actions that will be made by this administration, the way it governs, will that always be put into question until this issue is resolved?
Yes, definitely. Because as I have mentioned, there will always be a threat that he will be replaced as the next president because of this pending question before the Supreme Court. And this is the reason why we have been calling much, much early on na dapat inakyat na to sa Korte Suprema before pa. And in fact, sinasabi namin noon pa na actually advantages on the part of Bongbong Marcos that these cases are elevated to the Supreme Court as soon as possible rather than this late. Kasi nga, imagine the scenario where siya na yung nanalo sa eleksyon, pagkatapos biglang mag-rule ang Supreme Court na either disqualified siya or hindi siya eligible. Then can you imagine the effect of this in the country? So you think yung 31 million, okay lang ba sila na matanggal siya sa pwesto, notwithstanding that he won presumably the elections? Or imagine the possibility na mapalitan siya later on and there will be changes in the top administration. So this will be a lingering issue na hopefully sana po ma-decide din ng Korte Suprema as soon as possible. hopefully pag-akyat nila ngayon sa Korte Suprema that the Supreme Court can immediately settle this issue.
And so therefore, to the question of those supportive of this administration, to the petitioners, why can't they just let this be? You have that 31 million mandate. There's a possible sowing of discord here. If the court decides against the former senator, why should this question be asked? And why should this matter be resolved?
Well, una-una, we have to clarify, no? Hindi po kasalanan ng mga petitioners bakit ngayon lang ito inakyat sa court, sa Supreme Court. Remember, they have filed as early as October. October last year pa to. And can you imagine for more than 6 months, hindi po ito na-decided ng COMELEC, and ngayon lang po siya inakyat sa Korte Suprema. So in other words, hindi po dapat i-accuse of petitioners or kahit sino man because of the delay. But I think it really falls on the, for example, on the part of the COMELEC, kung bakit inantay pa na matapos ang eleksyon bago na-decidean, and saka lang po nung nagkaroon na ng botohan, yung sakalang dinismiss yung kaso. Hopefully po, mas inagahan sana yung pag-decide nito at sana natapos na ito way before the May 9 elections. But unfortunately, andito na nga tayo sa situation na nagkaroon ng delay, severe delay on the part of the COMELEC. And of course, ngayon ang nangyayari is umakyat ito sa Korte Suprema. And of course, by June 30, we anticipate na magkakaroon na po ng proclamation whoever will win in the canvassing before Congress. And of course, as we have repeatedly mentioned, this will be, of course, not only a legal problem, but a question of stability of the country, considering the fact that there is still an opening or a possibility that Bongbong Marcos, notwithstanding him winning the election, na hindi pa rin po siya makaupo because of this disqualification or cancellation case filed before him way back in October.
Attorney Marañon, dun sa mga nag-iisip na bakit hindi na lang pwede pabayaan ito, magkakagulo pa, bakit hindi na lang hayaan, sundin na lang yung 31 million vote mandate ni former Senator Bongbong Marcos. Ang tanong ko sa inyo, bakit hindi dapat ito hayaan na maging ganito na lang at sumunod na lang dun sa mandato na ibinigay kay former Senator Bongbong Marcos by virtue of the 31 million votes that he garnered during the elections? Go ahead, attorney.
Because at the end of the day, you know, everyone must be reminded that we are still ruled by the law. I mean, hindi pa rin ito palakasan ng boses or palakasan ng sigaw o paramihan ng boto. At the end of the day, the rule of law must prevail. And the law says, pag disqualified ka. Pag hindi ka qualified, hindi ka qualified. So, simple as that. So, ibig sabihin po niyan, that is why the Supreme Court has been very consistent. If you are not qualified, if you are not eligible to run in a particular position, no amount of votes will cure that deficiency. No amount of vote will cure that lack of qualification. So yun po yung paulit.
Attorney Marañon?
Sabi ng Korte Suprema.
Attorney Marañon?
Since time.
All right. Attorney Marañon, are you still with us? Okay, we just lost Attorney Emil Marañon, our connection to him, I should say. But we are going to try to get him back on the line because we do have just two final questions that we want to ask Attorney Emil Marañon. He is, of course, an election lawyer. But before we go back to him, we're going to move on with the rest of the news this noon. The Philippine elections may be drawing to a close, but the race for the Senate presidency, that has just begun. Sherian Torres now tells us at least five lawmakers are reportedly eyeing the third highest post in the land.
With a new batch of 12 senators soon to be proclaimed by the Commission on Elections, talks as to who will be the next Senate president start to heat up, with the names of Senator Cynthia Villar and Juan Miguel Zubiri said to be leading the race. Senator Sherwin Gatchalian and Senate returnees Loren Legarda and Francis Escudero are also reportedly eyeing the post. A contender needs at least 13 votes to corner the Senate presidency. In line with this, two senators told ABS-CBN News that Zubiri has already bagged the majority votes. Their colleagues' disapproval of Villar, the sources say, was due to her bad temper and her conflict of interest as a business magnate should she lead the chamber. One of the sources adds what they would not want to see at the podium is someone who is hot-headed, who doesn't know the rules, and one who doesn't observe proper decorum. The sources also claim Zubiri enjoys the backing of presumptive President Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. Sought for reaction, Villar, through her media relations officer, says it's still too early to discuss the Senate presidency. Zubiri likewise refuses to comment on the matter. But former Senator Antonio Trillanes IV, who worked with Zubiri and Villar, says his information is that Villar is leading the Senate presidency race.
Si Senator Zubiri kasi ano to eh, ika nga eh, Mr. Congeniality, ano? So mabait siya sa lahat eh. That may be a problem kung kailangan mong maging independent. Si Senator Cynthia Villar, ano siya eh, unifying figure kasi parang motherly yung dating, parang principal ano, sa eskwelahan.
A Senate president, according to Trillanes, must be an institution veteran and someone who enjoys the respect and good relations of his or her colleagues. He adds a Senate president is third in the Constitution's line of succession, controls the yearly budget of the Senate, and handles the SP office's confidential funds. Trillanes says the Senate president also decides what committee will be given to every member. Another unnamed Senate source also predicts a Villar victory over Zubiri, citing Bongbong Marcos's refusal to endorse Zubiri's father in the congressional race. Another supposed Villar advantage is her husband Manny's strong affiliation to both the Duterte and Marcos camps. Dr. Jean Franco of the University of the Philippines Political Science Department, who incidentally worked as a Senate legislative staff years ago, meanwhile underlines the reality of how one is chosen as a Senate president.
Kung inendorso ng presidente, that's the reality. Wala akong natatandaan naging Senate president na hindi gusto ng presidente. Do kasi importante din na ano eh no, na pagdating sa budget process, pagdating sa kanyang main legislative agenda, priority legislative agenda, eh makuha niya yung suporta ng Senate.
And whether it will be a Villar or Zubiri leadership at the Senate, the scenario will still be the same, according to Franco.
Halimbawa, Senator Villar, magiging as independent, as feisty as the person is ba ang chamber?
No. No. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the entire country must watch out for.
Can you say the same thing to a Zubiri leadership?
Pareho eh. Yan ang nakikita ko. Mm-hmm. We don't know what developments will happen in the next 3 years, pero ano eh, I think the yung 30 million votes matter a lot in terms of political capital.
Senate Minority Leader Franklin Drilon, who served as Senate President for a number of years, has some reminders to those competing for the chamber's top post. An effective Senate President, he says, is a consensus builder and one who knows how to enter a compromise when crafting laws. Sherian Torres, ABS-CBN News.
And we have him back. Election lawyer Emil Marañon joins us once again. Sorry about that. Let's continue our discussion. Final two questions, Attorney Marañon. First off, talk to us about the sense of urgency that is needed now for the Supreme Court to decide on this issue.
Well, of course, for the sake of stability, no, yung parang hindi rin ma-disappoint yung voters si Bongbong Marcos, and at the same time, hindi din po nag-aantay yung buong bayan as regards the issue of whether he is qualified or he has the eligibility to become the president. Then there is an urgent need for the Supreme Court to resolve this immediately. So, but ang problema lang po nito is meron pong 30 days yung mga petitioners to actually go up to the Supreme Court. So kung after elections na po yan, mag-aantay pa po tayo ng medyo matagal-tagal pa bago makaakyat yung mga petitioners sa Supreme Court. But hopefully nga po yung best scenario dito is before proclamation sana, but I don't think that can happen considering the fact that medyo complicated ang issue na involved dito, and of course it involves the highest position in the land, so medyo mahaba-haba pong usapan ito sa part ng Supreme Court. But of course, the best scenario is they can resolve this as soon as possible.
Alright, now, we all know that Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio is looking to have her inauguration, I think, on June 19th. If this isn't resolved then, and if, although you said it a while ago that it's highly not likely that the Supreme Court will actually issue a temporary restraining order on the canvassing of the votes, are we looking at a possible Sara Duterte Carpio sitting in as president if this is resolved by then?
Okay. Again, let me refresh yung nangyari sa COMELEC. So essentially, the issue is as regards Bongbong Marcos not paying his taxes back in 1985. No? So yun yung issue na lingering ngayon. And there were two types of petitions raised before the COMELEC. One is the denied due course petition, and the second, ito po yung mga disqualification cases. Mm-hmm. Now, pag ang denied due course yung na-decided ng Korte Suprema, then ang effect nito po is as if hindi nag-filed ng Certificate of Candidacy or COC si Bongbong Marcos, this would mean po it is as if he will be treated as if he did not file his Certificate of Candidacy. It is as if he is not a candidate, and therefore po lahat ng boto cast in his favor will be treated as stray and therefore not be counted or be disregarded by the Supreme Court later on po. So yun po yung effect niya. Mm-hmm. So that this would mean po yung ang uupo if in case na yung denied due course petition yung masusustain ng Supreme Court is yung may second highest number of votes doon sa kinanvas ng Kongreso po. So yung second placer, in other words, which is technically not the second placer but first placer, since yung number one nga po, hindi na siya treated as a candidate. The second scenario is of course the disqualification case. If in case po na yung mangyayari is yung disqualification case yung isustain ng Korte Suprema, what will happen po is that the rule on succession as a general rule will apply. However, there are, ang Supreme Court po medyo flip-flopping as regards the issue kung sino po yung uupo, because there are also cases where the Supreme Court has actually ruled that it is the second placer yung uupo po, hindi yung vice president. So again, pag cancellation case, klaro na yung second placer yung uupo. Pag disqualification case, it's either the vice president, the winning vice president, or the second placer yung pwede pong iproklama ng Korte Suprema.
And finally, can you tell us if you know of any case that the Supreme Court had actually overturned the decision of the COMELEC on bank?
Even the Grace Po petition, it must be recalled that the Grace Po petition, dineclare po na ineligible si Grace Po sa level ng COMELEC, pero pagdating sa Korte Suprema, it was reversed by the Supreme Court. So, of course, hindi naman all the time na po anong ruling ng COMELEC, yun na po yung i-adopt ng Korte Suprema. So, independent naman ang Supreme Court. So, in any way, we don't expect the Supreme Court to just blindly follow the ruling of the COMELEC, and I'm pretty sure that they will make their own independent assessment of the case and of the evidence presented by the parties.
Election lawyer Emil Marañon III, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it. Take care and you keep safe.
Maraming salamat.
And back here in the newsroom, a Cebu Pacific official has apologized to Vice President Lenny Robredo over a viral post by one of its pilots. Our correspondent Jervis Manahan now joins us with details. Jervis, what more can you tell us?
Carmina, a high-ranking official of Cebu Pacific, a local carrier, has apologized to Vice President Lenny Robredo and the general public after confirming that the viral post of their pilot has no basis and purely speculative. The viral Facebook post of their pilot, Van Renoa, claimed that Robredo used her office to demand priority landing, holding other flights and causing diversions after a campaign sortie from the South last month. Renoa even claimed that a diplomat from Australia and at least 7 infants were on board his flight and were all pestered by the vice president's demand. Cebu Pacific's vice president for flight operations, Sam Avila, said the post has no basis at all and even described the post as careless. Avila has apologized to VP Lenny Robredo and said that while aviators are free to express political opinion as free citizens, this must be done with prudence. Avila said the pilot is under disciplinary review in accordance to their company standards and said Cebu Pacific has strict guidelines on social media. The post has since been deleted. Cebu Pacific earlier said they are working with the Civil Aviation Authority of the Philippines with the matter. The pilot's post comes after netizens applauded the humility of Robredo, who flew economy class in the cheapest flight available to U.S. to attend the graduation of her daughter Jillian. Robredo has been the target of much disinformation online, according to fact-check initiative, check.ph. Carbina.
Thanks a lot, Jervis Manahan, there joining us on the line. And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, we'll talk to the spokesperson of leading vice presidential bet, Sara Duterte Carpio, about her plans as education chief. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. We are back. There's still a Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Civic groups challenge Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s impending electoral victory before the Supreme Court. A political analyst believes leading vice presidential bet Sara Duterte Carpio's experience as Davao City Mayor will help her lead the education department. North Korea records 6 more deaths, likely caused by its ongoing COVID-19 outbreak. And Ukraine falls back from the besieged city of Mariupol, ceding control to Russia. Back with more news, a Malacanang website that contains information on the regime of the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos Sr. remains inaccessible on Tuesday morning. Former Palace Communications Undersecretary Manolo Quezon first brought up that issue, but the Presidential Museum and Library asserts the website was not deleted. It adds the page was merely suspended to update its content and improve its security features. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio planning to take her oath as the Philippines' next vice president on June 19 in her hometown. That will be days ahead of the inauguration of presidential frontrunner Ferdinand Marcos Jr., who will likely assume office as the country's next leader on June 30, succeeding Duterte Carpio's father, President Rodrigo Duterte. The leading vice presidential candidate says her early inauguration will allow her to attend Marcos's own ceremony. The Uniteam tandem continues to hold a commanding lead in the latest unofficial tally of the Election Commission and may be proclaimed before the end of the month. A political analyst believes Duterte Carpio will do a good job when she becomes the next education secretary. Dindo Manhit of Strat-based ADR Institute says Duterte Carpio's experience as mayor of Davao City will work to her advantage.
People don't realize that mayors are actually experienced in running educational system at a very local level. Mm-mm. Because they run the local school board. In my experience of understanding the structure of public education in the Philippines is that you need to work with local. Because that's where the front line is. So if she can bring her experience as a mayor, work with career officials in the Department of Education,
or experts,
the technical side, the career officials, but on her part, make the Department of Education more responsive to its stakeholders.
Duterte Carpio was among the first cabinet appointees announced by leading presidential bet Ferdinand Marcos Jr. The Marcos camp has also said they are considering appointing to government positions candidates who lost in last week's elections. Well, what is Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio's vision for the education system as well as her role as the country's second highest official? Joining us now is her spokesperson, Liloan Mayor Cristina Garcia Frasco. Mayor Frasco, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate you coming to the show.
Hello, good afternoon. Mayong hapon.
Mayong hapon. First off, is this how it's going to be from here onwards, that we will be talking to you more and more instead of Vice Presidential bet frontrunner Sara Duterte Carpio once she assumes office, Mayor?
this is the first time you've invited me to this show. So certainly this is the first time that we're speaking. And as far as Vice President-elect Sara Duterte is concerned, her intention is to be a very visible, active, and hardworking vice president that will make her presence known all over the country, as this has been her governance style, to go directly to the people. So certainly the people of the Philippines will hear and see their vice president as a very active official, second highest official of our country.
What about accessibility to her thoughts and, you know, weekly press conferences? Can you give us a picture of how that's going to look like once she assumes office?
Any formalities and technicalities will be discussed post-proclamation of the vice president-elect. And therefore, talks of press conferences or any daily routines and schedules will be had after the proclamation, in line with the transition process as well.
All right. Because you're also going to be busy as mayor of Liloan. Are you also going to hold the same post, being her spokesperson, once she assumes office?
Well, I'm always here to support Vice President-elect Sara Duterte. And I am at her disposal and here to assist in any way. Yes, I've just been reelected as mayor of Liloan on my third term, for which I am very grateful. And I'm always here to support the vice president-elect, though we have not had any formal discussions on the role that I will take subsequent to the proclamation.
What about discussions as to the role being given to her? She's been given the education portfolio. She wanted the defense portfolio in the beginning. What are her thoughts regarding the denial of the post that she wanted to begin with?
There were primary discussions on the Department of National Defense prior to the campaign, but it was mutually agreed that this post will not be taken by Vice President-elect Sara Duterte in order to not sow intrigues as far as her loyalty to the president, because what she intends is to have a very harmonious working relationship with President-elect Bongbong Marcos. Secondly, she accepts wholeheartedly and with vigor and optimism the position of Secretary of Department of Education, because during the campaign, she's made it very clear that this is definitely one of the priorities for which she would like to devote her time and attention. She's been saying during the campaign that she feels that what should be given priority is the provision of livelihood lost during the pandemic, as well as a quality education for our fellow Filipinos, as this will be the building blocks to obtaining gainful livelihood. Mm. Vice President-elect Sara Duterte's record and performance on the aspect of education is also quite sterling as far as her serving as mayor of Davao City. Davao City has a literacy rate of 98.7%. And during her tenure, there have been thousands of scholars that have enjoyed the support of the Davao City government, well in line with her goal to use education as a platform for our youth to find their way out of poverty. And so this is a very welcome development as far as Vice President-elect Sara Duterte is concerned, and she intends to bring to the Department of Education action-oriented and solution-based leadership.
Okay, we're going to go into that a little bit more deeper later on, but first I want to go back to what you just said. Her accepting the education portfolio over the defense portfolio, you said it was mutually agreed upon to, in so many ways, also avoid intrigues. But is it that, or is it about keeping her at bay, as some have said? What is your reaction to that, that this whole move was just to keep her at bay, to make sure that the loyalty of the defense arm of the government remains with the presidential front runner, Bongbong Marcos, once he assumes office? Mayor, your reaction to that?
it's difficult for me to give a reaction to the hearsay statements of an unknown person. But what I can say is that Vice President-elect Sara Duterte has been very consistent as far as her message of unity and love of country together with President-elect Bongbong Marcos. And so there is no basis to claim that her not getting the Department of Defense post is to keep her at bay in any way. Rather, what we have seen is a continuation of the message and position of the unit team, which is that they will take a united stand as far as implementing the programs and projects that would help our fellow Filipinos recover from the ravages of the pandemic. Again, I wish to convey that in behalf of Vice President-elect Sara Duterte, she's very grateful for the opportunity to lead the Department of Education, and she has every intention to bring the necessary reforms to the DepEd and to bring action-oriented leadership to the department.
And reforms really are what's needed by the Education Department. First, let's talk about how Philippine history is being taught. What are the thoughts of Vice Presidential Bet front runner Sara Duterte regarding that and how it's being taught to our learners, Mayor?
Perhaps how history subjects are being taught is the question on that is best addressed to our history teachers under the Department of Education. At this point, there's been no discussion on anything in particular as far as history subjects under the Department of Education pending the proclamation and pending any formal transition process. I do know that Vice President-elect Sara Duterte has recognized that the current DepEd Secretary, Leonor Briones, has indicated that there is a medium-term plan for education in our country. And so the intention is that after the proclamation, Vice President-elect Sara Duterte will have formal discussions with Secretary Briones as well as President Marcos. So he will set the direction for education in this country that would be consistent as well with the intention of continuity as far as any current plans are involved. Vice President-elect Sara's experience as local school board chairman, she is well in tune with all the challenges that are faced by our students, learners, parents, and schools. And I anticipate that she will bring to the department not only the intention to continue plans that are working, but at the same time, action-oriented leadership that will allow us to institute changes from the ground up, born out of our experience, seeing the real challenges faced by our schools from the ground as local school board chairman.
Mayor Frasco, you said a while ago that the Philippine history is best left to the Philippine to history teachers, but they can only go so far as the policy allows them to. Will Sara Duterte Carpio be advocating the teaching of Philippine history as a separate and dedicated subject to our learners?
A grasp of history is very important to ensure that our young citizens have full knowledge of the occurrences in our country, as well as the capacity to envision where they would like to take our country in the future. As I've said, Vice President-elect Sara Duterte has not had any formal discussions on the transition into the Department of Education pending the proclamation. But what I do know from her public sentiments so far is that there also has not been any ground to say that there will be any efforts at changing history. Rather, the focus will be to ensure that we build globally competitive learners that will receive a high quality of education in our country.
Mm-hmm. Is it too early to ask you, Mayor Frasco, as to how incoming vice presidential or incoming Vice President Sara Duterte Carpio would want her father's administration be written in history books? Is it too early to ask that?
As I am aware, the intention of Vice President-elect Sara Duterte, together with President-elect Bongbong Marcos, is to continue on the gains of the Duterte administration, especially as far as the anti-criminality programs, as well as the very successful Build program of the Duterte administration. Ultimately, it is the people that will be the judge of the performance of any administration. And as we can see, President Duterte leaves with a very high popularity rating among the people. And it will be his performance that will speak for itself.
But what about the deaths that this administration will also leave behind? How do you think Vice President-elect Sara Duterte Carpio would want to have that written in history books, Mayor Frasco?
Vice President-elect Sara Duterte has nothing to do with these allegations, and should you wish to probe further into these matters, I believe there are appropriate venues for this, and certainly it is not by way of this platform. As far as Vice President-elect Sara Duterte is concerned, she's very interested in ensuring that we live in peaceful times in the Philippines, peace being the foundation for progress. And this is also one of the things that she has really built upon in Davao City as mayor. Davao City is very peaceful, and that is why it is also a very progressive city. And what we can anticipate from her as vice president-elect is to fully support President-elect Bongbong Marcos in ensuring that the Filipinos have a peaceful and progressive way of life.
In fact, she has been relentless in calling for unity even before the official campaign period started. But what do you say to those who have the opinion that in order to really achieve unity, one of the factors must be that the red tagging must stop?
The call of Vice President elect Sara Duterte has been both for unity and love of country. And therefore, it is important to her that the post-elections, all of us, no matter our political color or division, have to come together to be able to build upon the gains that have been made by the Duterte administration, and at the same time, welcome a new era of unity where the president and the vice president work together. As far as I know, Vice President-elect Sara Duterte welcomes everyone into the fold and wishes to reach out to every person who loves our country. If you wish to destroy our country, that's an entirely different matter altogether, because the position of Vice President-elect Sara Duterte is one where all of us, including our youth, have to redevelop a sense of love of country, discipline in ourselves as citizens, as this is the only way forward as far as recovering from the ravages of the pandemic and all the other challenges that we face as a nation.
And finally, Mayor Frasco, you know, she's coming into this office that has been transformed by her predecessor. How is she going to make the office of the vice president her own? What should we expect?
What we can expect from Vice President-elect Sara Duterte is that she will hold the office of the vice president first in full support of the office of the president. Second, that she will be a very visible, active, and hardworking vice president, in that she will make her presence felt all over our country, bringing with her not only her own platform, but importantly, support for the platform of governance of President-elect Bongbong Marcos. It's also very important to highlight that Vice President-elect Sara Duterte brings with her wide-ranging executive experience, having been mayor of the very progressive city of Davao. And therefore, with this vast executive experience, we can anticipate that she will be able to utilize the office of the Vice President to implement programs and projects that will have far-reaching benefits to our fellow Filipinos, in full support of the programs as well of President-elect Bongbong Marcos.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Liloan Mayor Cristina Garcia Frasco, we appreciate you coming to the show. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Daghan kayong salamat.
Salamat kayo. Six more die in North Korea as the country battles its first COVID-19 outbreak. According to state media, the death toll now stands at 56, with more than 1.4 million suspected coronavirus cases. At least 600,000 more are already receiving medical treatment. These developments come despite North Korean leader Kim Jong-un ordering nationwide lockdowns in a bid to slow the spread of the disease. The Philippine Health Department looking to expand the rollout of second COVID booster shots this week. The agency is just waiting for the final recommendation from the Health Technology Assessment Council before allowing the administration of a fourth dose to senior citizens and health workers. The rollout is currently limited to immunocompromised individuals.
We are very, very much hopeful that for this week, the final recommendations will be out, and we'll be able to proceed with vaccinating our senior citizens and healthcare workers. I just like to inform the public that it was the Department of Health which have submitted and requested the FDA to amend the EUA so that our healthcare workers, our senior citizens, and immunocompromised will be given these fourth doses. Mm-hmm. So we are really facilitating so that we can be able to proceed with the fourth doses for our senior citizens and our healthcare workers.
Ukraine has ended its combat mission in the besieged city of Mariupol, ceding control to Russia. Ukraine says more than 260 fighters have been rescued from the Azovstal steel plant, which had been the last holdout of the Ukrainian resistance in Mariupol. At least 53 people are seriously wounded. The rescue mission was carried out after war commanders ordered the unit stationed at Azovstal to save the lives of their personnel. Ukraine's armed forces describe the defenders of Mariupol as heroes. Another operation is underway to rescue others who remain inside Azovstal. Russian President Vladimir Putin brushes off Finland and Sweden's plan to join the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, but he says the expansion of NATO's military infrastructure into their territories would certainly trigger a response from Russia. Putin's deputy foreign minister earlier said the two countries' move was a mistake that will have far-reaching consequences. In business, Saudi Arabia, the world's biggest oil exporter, expects to ramp up its daily production by more than 1 million barrels by 2027. This means the kingdom will produce over 13 million barrels per day. The announcement comes a day after state-owned energy giant Aramco posted an 82% jump in first-quarter profits, buoyed by a global surge in oil prices stemming from the war in Ukraine. The Philippine government needs around 326 billion pesos in new revenues annually to pay the debts incurred during this pandemic. That's according to Albay 2nd District Representative Joey Salceda, who heads the lower house's tax writing panel. According to the House Ways and Means Chairman, the next administration must implement smart and efficient tax policies to address the debt overhang. He adds, expanding fiscal space is needed to avoid incurring budget cuts or having to borrow again to pay the debt. The Philippine government's outstanding debt has climbed to 12.68 trillion pesos as it tapped foreign and local lenders to bankroll the massive cost of its COVID-19 response. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.